This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Parshas Emor. So good evening, welcome. So three ideas we'll share tonight. I hope we'll have time, we'll see how we do. If you're listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. I'll send you the handouts. There is a very interesting kasha in this week's parsha of the Oznayim LaTorah. The Oznayim LaTorah is Zalman Sorotskin. We know Zalman Sorotskin here in Hendon, but he's actually a great grandson of Zalman Sorotskin, named after him. And he asked a fascinating question on this week's parsha. Parsha's Emor primarily deals with Kohanim, all the various issues regarding Kohanim, what it makes a mum that prevents him from actually serving the Beis HaMikdash, also the mum of Karbonos. And then at the end of the parsha deals with the various Yom Tovim. And then at the very end you have the parsha of the Mekala, which Mitzvim will come to. But at the beginning, one of the things that it talks about is Osei v'Espanoi. What does that mean? If you take a look at the first box, the pasuk says, V'shar Osei, Osei v'Espanoi lo sishchetu b'yom echad. You're not allowed to shecht the cow, the mother, and its child on the same day. That's what the pasuk says in this week's Sedra. Osei v'Espanoi. The Rambam says, if you take a look at the second box in Hilchos Shechita, Perek Yud Beis, it applies today. If you know, if you are a farmer and you've got the mother there, you're not allowed to shech the mother and then offspring, either the boy or the girl, or indeed the other way around. Rashi in the Pasuk brings the other way around. You can't shech the child and then the mother on the same day. And it applies, says the Rambam, whether it's regular food, regular animals, or hegdish. So who gets malchus? Who violates it? Obviously the person who shechs the second animal. Therefore, if you think about it, someone comes along and shechts a cow, which is an act which is 100% permitted. By doing that, he has created an issa on the rest of the Jewish people. That another Jew comes along and they warn him and they say, listen, if you shech that animal, there is an issa osu espanai, and he'll get malchus if he shechs that animal. How can Reuven come along and do something which is perfectly permitted, and in so doing, create an issa on Shimon? It's a strange concept when you think about it. So took a look at the Oznayim LaTorah. Lo yisishchat lo ne'ema, ela lo yisishchatu, in the plural, malamed, she'im shochat Reuven esoeim, v'achkach shochat Shimon esaben, v'hisru bo leike. It's more in chulin, then the second one will get malchus. And he's, the Oznayim LaTorah wrote in a very poetic way. Of course, you know, based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Me'eis Hashem Hoysa Azarzu. This warning, this prohibition, is clearly divine. It's from Hashem. Niflesi beinenu. It's wondrous in our eyes. She'ish echad b'nei Yisrael. One person from the Jewish people, also dava hamuta beheklet, can do something which is absolutely permitted, i.e. shochat para, to shecht an animal. And on the rest of the Jewish people, he has thereby created an issa that I can't shech the child on that day. And if he does shech it and he was warned, he'll get malchus. How can one guy create this prohibition on other people? That's his question. Listen to his answer. Last line. This teaches us it teaches us that we are one family. In other words, we're one being, which is not true with other nations. For us, the people of the book, the people of Torah, neshama achas, we actually have one neshama. It's not pshat that we're just part of one family. We are one neshama. We're all from the same. Klolis l'chol Yisrael. Right, kagufim nifrodim. It's just that we've got different bodies. Mikan shekol Yisrael arevim zelazeh klapei shmai. In terms of, from a heavenly perspective, we're all responsible for each other, but we actually are part of one neshama. So someone does something, well, that affects the neshama. So it's not a kasha. Yes, of course, if your finger does this, then of course the whole body's going to hurt. So one person doesn't act, it can impact other people. We're part of one neshama. Yeah, so someone told me recently, they were a solicitor who was working on a particular case, and they had to get a dayan in to involve, because it was involved ribbis and interest cases. And there was a non-religious person who was, I don't know exactly the case, but he was there in the meeting. And he said, but he was troubled by the fact that you're allowed to charge interest to a non-Jewish person, but you can't charge it to a Jewish person. So he says, if charging interest is morally repugnant, then how come it's allowed for a non-Jewish person? Which is a valid question. So the Dayan responded, he said, it's not morally repugnant to charge interest. This is normal business commerce. What the Torah is telling us, that when you lend to another Jew, you can't lend. Why? Because if your brother asks you for a loan, you don't charge him interest. And the Jewish people are one family. In other words, you should lend with interest. That's how life works. But when your brother asks for you for a loan, you don't charge interest. That's really why it's because we're one family. Now, that you can't mention this idea without mentioning the famous the Vata of Meir Shapiro. In 1913, there was the famous trial of Mendel Bilis. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's a famous trial. What was the case? There was a Jew, a Russian Jew, by the name of Mendel Bilis, who was framed so that he had kidnapped a Russian 13-year-old boy and had killed him. And it was part of a ritual murder to take his blood, to use it on Pesach from baking of matzahs, part of the ancient anti-Semitic blood libel, which sadly reared its head not only in the 20th century, but even here in Golders Green in London, about, I forget exactly how long, 15 years ago or so, a pamphlet went out from a certain religious organization saying Passover is coming, and at the bottom it said, watch your children. Right? So it's an anti-Semitic, and it's based on such nonsense, because, first of all, there is no concept in Judaism to do anything of the sort. Blood is prohibited. You don't bake matzahs with it. It's all shtusim. And yet, it sadly had some sort of longevity. But anyway, in 1913, Mendel Bilis was framed. A Russian child was found dead. And Mendel Bilis was accused of killing him to take the blood to bake matzahs. And it was a trial. He was in prison for 2 years. And although he eventually was acquitted, but the trial took place, I think, in 1915, October till November. And it's a fascinating, if you ever want to read about it, it's a fascinating thing to look into. The prosecution witness was a Catholic priest, a Lithuanian Catholic priest by the name of Justinus Pronatus. And he was a known anti-Semite. He had written a book in 1892 called Talmud Unmasked, and where he showed in his corrupted version of that the Talmud was considered was anti-Semitic, and he was the key witness. Now, the defense for Mendel Bilis were top lawyers, and they exposed his ignorance. He was considered an expert witness and an expert in Talmud and Gemara, but they just showed that he didn't know anything. They asked him basic things. There were enough Jews in the public gallery. They burst out laughing many times during the trial when he displayed enormous ignorance. They asked him basic Jewish concepts in the Gemara. They asked him what chulin is and things like that. He had no idea. There are masechtas. I mentioned before, there's Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba... That's a masechta, one of the tractates in Seder Nezikin. So the witness, the defense lawyer said to this fellow, this priest, Pronatus, they said to him, who was Baba Basra and what was her job? Like, as if Baba was a bubba and all that. And he started explaining. And they laughed. There was laughter from the public gallery because it exposed his... he explained in great detail how there were 13 wounds on this body and that shows it was a ritual slaughter, etc. It was later revealed there were actually 14. Right? So the whole thing fell apart. But it caused enormous damage. Eventually he was acquitted. He went... He left Russia. Anyway, but as part of this trial, the defense lawyer was concerned that the prosecution are going to come across a Gemara in Yevamos. And the Gemara in Yevamos seems to say something which is derogatory against non-Jewish people. Why? If you take a look at the fourth box on the page, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel. The pasuk says, Va'aten tzoyni tzoyn marisi. You are my flock, the flock of my pasture. Odomatem, you are man. Ani elokeichem. So the Gemara Yevama Samach Aleph Amud Aleph takes this pasuk and says, "Atem krim Adam." It says, "Adam Atem Atem." You, the Jewish people, are called Adam. Ve'ino avdi kechavim krim Adam. But the non-Jewish people are not called Adam. So they wanted to take this Gemara as proof that non-Jewish people are sort of subhuman, and therefore it's legitimate to kill a 13-year-old Russian boy, etc., etc. So the defense attorney went to Rav Meir Shapiro and said, the great Lublin Rav, Chachmei Lublin, the innovator of Daf Yomi, and said to him, "Well, what do we do with this Gemara? How can I explain it?" So Rav Meir Shapiro famously said, this is the same theme as what the Oznaim Latorah is saying, that Klal Yisrael are considered one goof. What does that mean? Cast your mind back, how long ago it was, 10 years ago, the three boys, right? Did we ever meet these three boys? But the whole of Klal Yisrael were davening for three boys they'd never met. We, you know, okay, here in London, we know many of us perhaps knew the D family, but most didn't. And certainly in across the world, and everyone was totally taken by this, and, you know, it was a cloud over the whole of Pesach because of it. Why is that? The answer is, like the Oznaim Latorah is saying, that we're all neshama achas, we're all part of one neshama, we're one family. So if there's a sadness in the family, we all feel it. If in the non-Jewish world, if there's something, a guy is down and out in Venezuela, the fellow in Italy is going to be concerned, he's not going to be able to sleep at night, and the person in New Zealand is going to spoil his supper. The answer is, they're not, because they're not connected in the same way that Klal Yisrael are connected. That's exactly the point. And says Rav Meir Shapiro, that's what the Gemara means. Atem kriyam odom, you are one person. And therefore, what pains the left arm will hurt the right arm. You're all one being. Atem kriyam odom, ve'enu evdi kechavim kriyam odom. Of course they're human beings. That's not what the Gemara means. But it means there's a certain connectivity between Klal Yisrael. We're odom, we're one neshama. And that explains the Osef Espinoy. You know, when Rabbi Hartman told me that he was once in a shul, this is going back many years, it was a very English shul. And there was a time where there was some unrest in Gaza. And Nebuchadnezzar, some young Israeli, you know, the Israeli soldiers had to go in, and it's a very dangerous area to go into. There's hand-to-hand combat and there's ambushes, and it was dangerous times. And as ever, there were issues, there were fatalities. And he wanted to make a mishaberich in this shul for the chayalim, for the soldiers. They're risking their life, they're in danger. It was a very difficult time. And he went into whichever shul it was a very English shul, and he gets an aliyah, and he says, "I'd like to make a mishaberich for the chayalim, for the tzvag and al Israel." And the fellow said, "Our allegiance is to the British army. We can't make that mishaberich for foreign armies." So Muhammad was quite shocked. So he said, "Okay." He said, "Can I make a mishaberich for some members of my family?" "Yeah, that's okay." "Fine, mishaberich, I'm Yaakov, yeah. Yivarech es achai, your brothers, shebetzvahaganah b'Israel." that's exactly the point, yeah? Neshama achas. All right, let's move on. Well, okay. So the end of the parasha, the end of the parasha deals with the Mekalel. Take a look at paragraph 2. Vayetze ben Isha Yisraelis. So a man went out. He was the son of an Isha Yisraelis. Vahu ben Ish Mitzri, and he was the son of an Egyptian, Betoich ben Yisrael. Vayinotzu b'machane, and there was some sort of altercation in the camp. Ben HaYisraelis v'Isha Yisraeli. Okay, we'll leave that for the minute. Vayikav ben HaIsha Yisraelis Hashem v'Yikalel. And this fellow, he cursed. He cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He blasphemed. And they brought him to Moshe Rabbeinu. The name of his mother was Shlomis. Shlomis Bas Divrei, the tribe of Don. And he was put in jail in this holding cell to find out what his what was in store. In other words, they explained that they knew it was Chayv Misa, but they weren't sure which Misa. So the blasphemer blasphemed in this week's parasha. Now, who was he? Rashi gives lots of background to who he was. I'm just going to go with two of the pshatim that Rashi brings. First one, in the bottom box, Vayetze ben Ish Yisrael. It's with Barachi Omer, Miparsha Shalamal Yotzo, Ligleg V'Omar. He is on the parasha that happened before it. We're talking about the Lechem upon him. Because it says, B'yoma Shabbos Yarchenu, on Shabbos you have to prepare it. Derech HaMelech Lechol Pas Chama B'chol Yom. The way of a king is to eat hot bread every day. The pas was baked on a Friday. The lechem apon is baked on a Friday. You take it the next day because you can't bake it on Shabbos, and you transfer it and you take it into the and you remove the old one, you put the new one in, and it's there for a week. And then the following week you eat it. So if you bake it on Friday, that's Friday Shabbos. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos is 9 days. So you're eating 9 day old bread. 9 day old bread is not fresh and tasty. So how can this be? So Ligle, he mocked and scoffed and said, this is nonsense. That's one pshat. That was the cause of his blasphemy. Masnisa Omra, Mibestin Shal Moshe Yotza Mechuyev, he came out Mechuyev, etc., etc. Now, then it says, V'shem Imoy Shlomis Bas Divri. Who's she? Shvachan Shal Yisrael, Shepirs Machkosav Lezu, Loima, Shehi Levata Hoyse Zayna. That this lady, Shlomis Bas Divri, was a Zayna, she was a woman of ill repute, and she was the only one in the whole of Klal Yisrael. What was her name? Shlomis. To have a pit petosh shalom aloch. She would go around. She would go around and wander around and sort of talk and chat and speak to everybody. Shalom aleichem mefatfetes bedvarim she'eles b'shalom akol. And that's seen as a criticism. She was too loose and going around speaking to everybody because say Chazal she was a zayna. Bastiv rida bronis hoisem medaberesim kol adam lefichoch kilkula. And that was the slippery slide that caused her to slip. Now, there's a sefer called the Tosefer Shabbos, which I saw in the sefer Kamoitzi Shal Arach. And the Tosefer Shabbos is written by someone called Rafal Mizels, and he quotes his father with this very interesting idea. Take a look at the next page. Im nesbeinen heitev, if you contemplate this carefully, nimtze yesh nafgemina ben shnei pefarshim ha-perushim. The first pshat is, why did he blaspheme? Because he saw the lechem aponim stay on 9 day old bread. According to the second pshat, he came from an isha zayna who was very loose and would go out and speak to everybody, and that was his downfall, and therefore, as it were, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, or however you want to explain it. Now, what's the nafgamina? So what's the nafkamina? The nafkamina is, according to the pshat, that he was ligleg because of the lechem upon him, the mother was okay. There's nothing wrong with her, it was him that's the problem. According to the other pshat, the mother was the problem. Vihine. Now listen to this. Yodua, ma'asha omru chazal, she said there is a klal. She tzadikim, shemom koidim lohem. Their name comes first. Vil harashoim, heim kidmu lishmom. And when it comes to rashoim, they come before the name. What does that mean? For example, the Medrash asks the Kasha in the Pasuk, V'shmoi Lovan. And his name was Lovan. Lovan was a Rasha. And according to the above rule, it should have said, V'lovan Shmoi. Heim Kidmu Lishmoi. For Rishoim, the name comes first. So why with Lovan does it say, U'shmoi Lovan? That's how it works for Sadiqim. Or Mataritz HaMedrash, the Medrash explains, Shahayim Melubin Barasha. He was cloaked in wickedness. For Kavnos Loma Shel Lavan Einenu Shem HaEtzem Ela Shem HaToya. That Lavan, according to this, was not his name. It was a description. It was an adjective, not a noun. For Afkan Zuos Kavnos Rashi. That's what Rashi is telling us. She Tovas LeIkes Apirish Hasheni VeKosov She Achas Hoyse Zoynim Apirish MaKosov. There was only one person who was a Zoynim. That's Rashi's preferred pshat. This is the Shlomis Bas Divri. Umimela Hukshel Rashi. If that's the case, I've got a problem. If the mother was indeed a Zoynim, she was not. She was a wicked lady. Eich Kosov V'Shem Imoy Shlomis. That doesn't fit into the rule. The rule is when it comes to Rishayim, Heim Kidmu Lishmam. So how come it says v'shem imoy shlemis? That's the wrong way around. V'halu b'rishoyim shmom kaidim lohem. V'al kein tiretz me'ein ha-tiretz b'inin lovon. We can answer the same answer that we said with lovon. Shahashem shlemis, the name shlemis was not her real name. It was a description. It was an adjective, not a noun. who mishum shoyis sheelis b'shalom akol. That was a description that she would go around talking, schmoozing, speaking to everybody. Vim kain who ain't a shame hoetzim. That was not her real name. El shem toya. U'mayushav heitiv loshna posuk. Now I understand. Just like with Lavan, it was a description of who he was, but not his actual name. So to his shlemis, that's a description of who she was. Messiah Bala Tesefer Shabbos, he concludes with Pirush Nechmad Vatimuk Tapich Chadvash. It's a beautiful pshat, it's as sweet as honey. That's what he quoted in the name of his father. So that's the second offering. Let me just finish with one final thing. After you have the Mekalel, who goes out and blasphemes, the parsha ends, not there, but with a few more psukim describing personal injury and injury to property. If you look at the psukim, the last box, take him out. He gets skila. That's what happens to a person who blasphemes. End of that parsha. It then talks about other forms of, you kill another person, you get killed. Maka nefesh behema, you injure an animal, you kill an animal. Yishamen and tach nefesh tach nefesh, you got to pay for it. Or maka nefesh behema, yishamena veishki tein mumba mitoi, kashe osa kein yoseloi, etc., etc. So the question I saw in the writings of Mordechai Kamenetsky, he says a very beautiful thing. Blasphemy, cursing the Ribbono Shel Olam, is a heinous crime. Why are we grouping together petty injuries together with this very heinous crime of blasphemy? In the same psukim, surely an affront, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is much worse than attacking human beings and certainly animals. So he tells a lovely story. Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz was one of the great Rabbonim in Europe in the 1700s. One time he was away for Yom Kippur, and he finds himself in a small village somewhere, and he needs a shul. He goes to this shul, and in those days, you can be the greatest of one of the Gedolei Hador, but no one recognizes you. It wouldn't happen nowadays. We've got Hamodia, and we've got the pictures, and we all know who's who. But in those days, everyone's heard Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, but no one recognizes him. He goes to this shul, and he needs a place to daven. So he looks around, where shall I find my, where shall I seat myself for the next 25 hours for Yom Kippur? And he sees a guy in the corner, shuckling and shaking and preparing himself for Yom Kippur. Looks good to me. So he puts himself next to him, and sure enough, this guy davens so beautifully, Elach, and he's shuckling and he's crying and there's tears, and he overhears some of his tefillahs, Anochi offer ve'efa, I'm nothing, and this carries on. The next morning, again, it continues more of the same. And then it comes to Kriya Satura. And all of a sudden, the Gaba starts calling people up. And he calls up Shlishi, someone from the other end of the shul. And that triggers the fellow next to Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, who's been davening so beautifully till now. He says, what? He runs to the front of the shul. You give him Shlishi? He says, I know much more Torah than him. I daven better than him. I'm more miyuchas than him. I'm this, I'm that. How can you give him? And then he just walks back to his seat. And everyone is in shock. And Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz is like, can't believe it. So he says to this fellow, he says, tell me. He said, I overheard your tefillahs. A few moments ago you were saying, Anochi ofer ve'efer, I'm nothing. So all of a sudden, how could you have this outburst? So the fellow said, of course I'm ofer ve'efer. But that's klapei Hashem. That's relative to God. But relative to him, was pshat, that many times we give honor, as it were, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the immortal, and much less honor to the mortal, to human beings, and certainly to animals. What the Pasuk is saying, that we have to treat everyone with respect, starting from animals, and then leading up to human beings, and certainly will reach the Almighty. That's the point. And therefore, you put the whole lot together to teach us that we have to give honor to everybody. We have to respect even animal kind, certainly human beings, and certainly, ultimately, the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay, so there we have three ideas. The first idea, how can it be Osev Espanoi? How can one person create a Chiv and Issa on the other person? The answer is with one Neshama, and that was the answer of the Znai Maturin, the famous case of Mendel Bilis, Atem Kriyim Odom, because we're all interconnected. Then you have the Mekalel, why, according to the favored pshat of Rashi, that description for shame imo shlemis bas divrei seems to be the wrong description, because that's how tzaddikim are described. V'shem imoy shlemis, the shame comes before the shlemis. But if she's a zayna, how can that be? The teretz is the same as how the medrash explains lovan. V'shmoy lovan is the same problem, and we explain that to mean that it's he was meluban barasha. He was cloaked in wickedness. Well, so too here it was a description of her, but not her actual name. Interesting, very interesting pshat. And then you have the pshat of Mordechai Kamenetsky. Why we sort of group together these injuries, these petty injuries, in this heinous crime of blasphemy together to teach us that important lesson that sometimes we have to remember to be able to treat everyone with respect, starting with animals, then human beings, and ultimately HaKadosh Baruch. Okay, thank you.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.